on Vedic culture, which is a very big topic to speak on in half an hour or even half a lifetime. Every society has some culture which is based either explicitly or implicitly, directly or indirectly, on a philosophy or worldview. Very broadly, we can say that modern materialistic society is based on the misunderstanding that life is meant for sense enjoyment, and that life is a product of matter, so therefore eat, sleep, drink, be merry and enjoy, for tomorrow we shall all be dead. We are not answerable to anyone. The Vedic culture is very broad, but as it's suggested, it's based on the understanding of the Vedic literature, and it is a identifiable genre or type. Generic, you know that word? So the noun from which the adjective generic comes is genre. It's identifiable as a specific culture. The basic point to be understood that it's all based on the knowledge of the Vedic literature, and that this life is not all in all. That this life is a preparation for a future life. Now, there are many schools of philosophy which claim to be based on the Vedas, but they all accept that there is life after death, and that we get future lives according to how we act in this life, as understood through the Vedic literature. Of course, that's interpreted in various ways, and some saying that, well, we have many lives, so let us enjoy sense gratification life after life. That it will act according to the Vedic directions and not commit sinful activities. We'll perform pious activities, by which we can get elevated to higher planets, and then we'll come back down again when the result of our pious activities is finished. We'll do more pious activities and we'll go up, and then this is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita by Lord Krishna. No, before that comes Chaividyamam Somapaputa Papa. That by following the three Vedas, they go up to the heavenly planets, and then Tetam Bhutva Swargalokam Vishalam Shine Punye Martyalokam Vishanti. Having gone there, they come back again. So this process is not recommended by those who are on a higher level. They understand that we should get liberated from birth and death, because material life is miserable. Even on heavenly planets, there's no happiness. What to speak of in Bosnia, which isn't a heavenly planet. I don't know if any of you noticed. America isn't either. In sitting in Bosnia, you might think America is heavenly, but it's not. And even heaven isn't heavenly, for that matter. It's all a big illusion that there's any happiness in the material world. Now, the highest level of Vedic culture is to understand from Bhagavad Gita, as it is, Kakava Yest, and Srimad Bhagavata, the jewels of the Vedic literature, which are meant for the topmost swan-like man, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, We are all His eternal servants, and the topmost perfection of life is to surrender at His lotus feet and go to the spiritual world to serve Him eternally. And guess what? In the spiritual world, they follow Vedic culture without the misunderstandings. Krishna Himself follows the Vedic, or rather the Vedic culture is the setting within which Krishna performs His transcendental pastimes. So although there are different philosophies or interpretations of the Vedas or levels of understanding of the Vedic knowledge, they all follow basically the same culture. Although, therefore, it can be said to be one generic group. So there are even Mayavadis, Karmavadis, devotees of Krishna, demigod worshippers, there are all so many different varieties. But they all have in common that there are many points. First of all, understanding that everything that we do creates a reaction. So we have to be careful what we do. And what reaction comes is defined in the Vedic literature. But it can be very complex. Therefore, people approach Brahmanas, people have studied this. They're like interpreters of scripture, something. At one level, Brahmanas can be like lawyers because they say, in one sense, Brahmanas are like, some of them at a lower level, they're like lawyers. Because someone may go to them and said, well, you know, I killed a spider, what should I do? It's a sin. Can you imagine in Bosnia people thinking killing a spider is a sin? But it is. So they'll say, well, you have to do one activity to nullify the effect of this sin. So at the lower level, it's also an important level for common people in the Vedic culture, they guide people how to act in day-to-day life. And if you go to holy places, I just brought out a new book, you can see later about various holy places in India. There are Brahmanas who will guide you what to do. That having come here, the first thing you should do is shave, take a bath in the holy place, fast, and then different rituals you have to do. Nowadays people don't do all these things because people come in buses and it's become a religious tourism business. But still, it's religious. India's culture is deeply religious. Actually, the whole world was until the advent of the modern age with its grossly hedonistic ambience. So Brahmanas will guide, so people respected Brahmanas as people who can help us to act in a way that is for our higher benefit. What is beneficial to us was understood is a very important point. Not just in terms of the here and now, the present situation, but in terms of the future life and future lives also. And people would tend to act in a manner that is for their long-term benefit rather than short-term benefit. This is a sign of intelligence. Just like you may work in a factory, but then you may go to night school to get some qualifications so that you can become an engineer in the factory rather than just a lever puller or an ordinary worker. So if you didn't go to the school, you could sit at home and watch TV or go in the park and chat with your friends, but you put some time, you sacrifice some time for your future benefit. So people who act for their future benefit, they are more intelligent than people who just think of how I can enjoy myself now. So on the whole, we can say that the Vedic culture is more elevated than that of the present materialistic culture, which is more or less based on the animal platform. They don't know that, just like animals, they have no higher knowledge. They're simply interested in ahara, nidra, bhaya, maitunam, cha, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And although they may do so in a more sophisticated way, without knowledge that after the body is finished, everything is not finished. Without that knowledge, it's a civilization which, although superficially is advanced, technologically advanced, but in terms of genuine knowledge of our existential position, they're no more advanced than the cats and dogs. And that reflects in their behavior, which is what I was saying. That every culture is based on philosophical understanding. So if there's no philosophical understanding of who we are, that there is a higher purpose of life, then we're going to be just like animals. That's all. So Vedic culture is meant for living as peacefully as possible in this world, which by nature is disturbed. We can't expect any real peace in this world. To even aspire for that is foolishness. In a world where it's actually full of violence, not just during a Bosnian war or a Lebanese war, but the whole situation of the world is full of violence. You can go out to the mountains and it looks very peaceful, but what's going on? There are animals are eating other animals. Bigger insect is eating a smaller insect. In the water, the big fish is eating the small fish. The small fish is also eating the bigger fish. You know that? Sometimes the small fish eat the big fish. They take a little bit out of the big fish's body, and the big fish turns around and swallows the little fish. So this is jivo jivasya jivanam. One living being is living by violence on another. It's not a peaceful world. But the Vedic culture is meant for establishing as peaceful a situation as possible, the best use of a bad bargain, so that we can maximize our concentration on the real purpose of life, which is that having attained this human form of life, which is very rare, it is attained after going through 8,400,000 species of life. Having attained it, we have sufficient intelligence to inquire what is the meaning of life. So having attained the human form of life, the really intelligent person thinks that, why am I suffering in this world? Why is there suffering? We have to suffer. Old age, disease, and death, and from the Vedic literature we understand, again, reborn, and again, struggle and suffering. So, labdva sudurlabham idam bahusam bhavante manusham idusham ihaj manusham artadam anityam api hadhira turnam yatetan apetet nishriyasaya vishyakalu sarvatasya. That having attained this human form of life, which is very rare, we should understand it is very valuable. Manushyam artha is temporary. We're not going to be here long. But turanam yateta napate danumritya yavan. As long as we are here, we haven't died yet. So let us utilize the opportunity to find out what is the highest goal, what is the real goal of life. And if we think that, well, I can enjoy myself, then the answer is you already so-called enjoy yourself in so many species of life. So now we should restrain the senses from interaction with the sense object and concentrate on the Supreme. So this is the basic background of Vedic culture. It's a very big topic. I've written an introductory book on that. And I've also written an unpublished much bigger book on the details of it, which Krishna willing I may be able to publish within a year or two. This knowledge of Vedic culture is essential for human society, because without it, it's not really human society at all. It's, as Srila Prabhupada often said, it's a society of polished animals. Sometimes people think Prabhupada was too heavy, he was calling people cats and dogs, but actually, they may think it's insulting, but I would say it's insulting to the cats and dogs, because the humans, they're not as elevated as the cats and dogs. At least the cats and dogs don't abort their children and organize massive slaughterhouses. So, subhuman. It appears to be a very advanced society, and people think that living a normal life is very good, but it's actually a disaster. What the normal person does in the course of a normal day is enough to send him for many, many lifetimes to hellish existence. So it's not at all normal by the standard of Vedic understanding. So in Vedic culture, yes, it has an entirely different basis. In any culture, in any civilization, any basis, foundation, in any society, there is some control, there's leadership, there are some utopian ideas of how of creating a society where all people are equal, but it never happens. Fraternité, what is that? Liberté, égalité, fraternité. The French Revolution was set up on the hope or the ideal that there can be liberty for all, fraternity and equality. But in the material situation, this can never be. In fact, although Western civilization has taken up the principle of liberty, people should have as much liberty as possible. This is not their invading culture, except for persons who are spiritually advanced. If we give liberty to do what you like to persons who are not aware of the purpose of life and who are not sense control, then they will misuse it. So it's better for them not to have liberty. We can see in the modern society people have the freedom to act to a large extent as they like. So that's what we're told. Although we are programmed by the educational system and by the TV and the magazines and the whole society to act in a certain way. But the freedom is there. The idea is that you should have freedom to act your life as you like, to the largest extent possible. But then people act as they like. They're acting like animals. Freedom should not mean freedom to slaughter animals. It should not be freedom to engage in sinful activities. You may think, well, why not? People like it. They like it, but they end up going to hell. So, and it makes the whole society hellish also. So it's just like a child. You don't give freedom to a child. If you give freedom to a child, a young baby will kill himself. And maybe kill others too. They have to be trained and guided. So people who don't have spiritual knowledge, they don't have knowledge of the goal of life, they also require to be controlled and trained. So giving freedom to persons who don't have knowledge of the goal of life and who are not sense controlled is not good for them or for society. Now, if we say these things, probably, you know, people will get really upset. You know, everyone should have as much freedom as possible. But no, if we understand the actual purpose of life, then it's better for everyone's benefit that people be controlled. In the modern age, there's the idea of women's liberation, women should be free to do, there's so much pornography. Better that they're controlled. They don't have the opportunity to sell their bodies and show themselves naked or half naked or quarter naked or whatever. So the idea that freedom, everyone should just, you get married and then you don't like your husband or you don't like your wife, so you just divorce and get another one. But this is cat and dog life. There's no sense of responsibility. So Srila Prabhupada presented this Vedic culture, and actually there are many things which are revolutionary according to the modern idea, but then the modern idea, it's actually a disaster. The whole modern society is a disaster. And although they're very proud that we've made a great civilization, what's so great about it? People have to work so hard just to get what's available in the fields. But you're not now in the European Union, you're not even allowed to farm. You're not even allowed to grow food. It's insane. But they're so proud that we are so advanced. So Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to introduce the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, the practice of Krishna consciousness, which is based on the Vedic culture. Krishna consciousness, the practice of Krishna consciousness can be very favorably enacted on the background of Vedic culture. The Vedic culture fosters an atmosphere which is favorable for Krishna consciousness. I was speaking a little bit about this morning, that in a grossly materialistic society where people will say, well, why are you wasting so much time praying? Why don't you enjoy it? Why don't you eat meat? So people, they won't understand. The Vedic culture is one in which, this morning in the Srimad Bhagavatam verse, it was discussing about how Shukadeva Goswami would only go to the house of householders long enough for the time for them to milk a cow, and he would take milk from them. And this, the whole concept is completely foreign to modern culture. First of all, that everyone should keep cows. The cow is the emblem of religion. The cow gives liquid religion in the form of milk, which nourishes the brain tissues necessary for higher understanding. And that there are wandering sadhus, people who wander, and people would say, well, what's the use? What do they contribute to society? But the householders understand that they have the highest contribution to society, because they understand that sadhus are connected with a higher reality, and they only interact with it. They can go to the caves of the mountains, but they live in the world simply to benefit others by pointing them, directing them to the actual reality, which is beyond this world of birth and death. So, cow protection, this is an essential part of Vedic culture. Krishna is described as Go Brahmana Hitta, one who is always thinking of the welfare of the cows and the Brahmanas. Brahmana doesn't mean one by caste, by birth, but one who is actually absorbed in higher understanding. Yes, sadhu king. Bring back sadhus. Yes, so we can stand up to see sadhu. Can have a little kirtan. Covering half an hour.
My half hour's up. Yeah, so out of, following any culture, given the time of the message, it's at the mic open to Jagatak Maharaj, the idea is... burning question. Regarding Vedic culture, one of the first things I learned living in India, which I've later tried to teach to many others, is I remember we were sitting in Kalika. I was sitting next to Jagadambalarati in Kalika Street in Bora Bazaar in Damodar Prasad Shastri's shop. And I gave you something, you don't remember. I gave you something in my left hand. So, what are you doing? You have to get it with your right hand. That was about 30 years ago. And I've been teaching it ever since.
Those flowers, starting with flowers. Whoever gets that one. The purple flowers, thy club. So,
now I'm sitting above you. So what can you do about
it? So what happened? You gave me some of the left hand.
I mostly just I was mostly talking about the philosophical background of Vedic culture. I didn't get much into it. I was saying how modern civilization is based on sense gratification, but Vedic culture is based on the understanding that human life is a preparation for the future. Yeah, whether karma, kanda, dhyana, kanda, or there are basic principles. Just talk about protecting cows, respecting animals, and so on.
Don't just hit the button. Wind it up naturally.
There'll be questions.
Hare Krishna. So that was easy to translate. So let us hear from Srila Jayantaka Maharaj, who has been based in Sridham Mayapur, the center of Vedic culture, the center of the spiritual world, for about 37 years now, and has traveled extensively throughout the whole of India, in the villages where the culture is more alive, and can tell us more about Vedic culture and its ultimate purpose.
What's the theme? What's the theme tonight?
The theme is Vedic culture, right?
That's what yes. Yes. Yes.
In India. Do you want the mic or what? Are you using the mic again?
No. Do you need?
Don't tell me. I'll keep it because we're supposed to be having questions and answers afterwards.
Maybe those that speak English can move away from her.
She was doing simultaneous translation.
And say, but those who know English can go away from her, and those who don't know English can sit next to her. So that way, anyone here that doesn't know English? We've been hearing His Holiness Bhakti Vikas Swami Maharaj. He's a very dear disciple of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vikas Swami Prabhupada. He's been, I met him during the time of Prabhupada distributing books in India. And somehow we got connected together. Since I was one of the Eastern India and Bangladesh, Southern India leaders, he actually learned Bengali. At that time, was preaching in Eastern India and Bengal, Bangladesh. Now he's based in Gujarat. I thank my association.
I see you more in the Western India.
Ramadan.
But he knows fluent Hindi also. He's on television. He publishes many books. He preaches all over the world. And he's very renowned for his scholarship. So you've been very fortunate to have his good association.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Very fortunate to have all the Vaishnavas association. Request Jai Thakur Maharaj to give us his very valuable guidance.
Get my guitar also. Small ones. You want the big ones?
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. Maybe too loud here.
No. Okay, people. No neighbors.
You draw them all away. This is the famous Bosnian Nabhad singer. Welcome to all of the devotees. We say Suswagatam. This is Vedic Sanskrit mantra. So, auspicious welcome. Auspicious arrival. Actually, as I heard Bhakti Vikas Swami Maharaj mention, that there are so many things you can discuss about Vedic culture. And then I understood he was speaking mainly the principles behind it. How Vedic culture was meant for preparing for the next life. Or ultimately, Varnashram is meant for pleasing Hari. And the whole society is organized so that the people can go back to Godhead. But having lived in India, Prabhupada told us that there are many aspects of Vedic culture, little details, which are just part of the Indian culture. There are also some problems. Prabhupada said that Chanakya, the great Pandit moralist, he said that if a person loses his money, if he becomes poverty stricken, then he loses all his good qualities. When people are desperate for money, they can lie, they can cheat, they can do it. So like in every place, there are some people like that. Maybe more. But there are also so many really good people. It's not that everybody is like that. So, one of the things the Prabhupada taught us was that we should receive our guests very nice. He was telling us one day in Mayapur that people coming to the Gaudiya Math, in those days not so many people were coming to ISKCON. Now more people come to ISKCON. Tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of people. But at that time, not so many people were coming. They were just new and constructed. So Prabhupada said that in the Gaudiya Math, they're very expert how to receive a distinguished guest. They bring a guest in. They speak very nicely to him or her. And they invite him for taking prasadam. And then they give nice prasadam. So then if it's an important person, then one of the top maharajas or leader there, he'll personally oversee the prasad distribution. Prasad distribution is in Bengal is a whole science. The different regions of India have different styles of eating based on their climate. This is said in the Vedas, there are six tastes. That means first is a bitter. Bitter. How does it go? Bitter, salty, pungent.
Sour,
sour, astringent, sour, and sweet. So they're served in that order. Bitter is given first. There's different bitter preparations. First time in Mayapur when we serve bitter melon to the devotees in the Gaur Purnima festival. This sakshi is, you know, spoiled, it's bitter. They don't know that the sakshi is supposed to be bitter. Now everybody knows bitter, but in the first time, nobody knew, they thought, this, what is going on? This is a bitter sakshi. It's not bad. That helps to get the digestive fluids moving. And then from when we go on the normal samjis, the chilies, in Bengal there's not too much astringent. Astringent, they have it in Assam. They actually use caustic soda. A few drops acid inside the samji. Inside, sometimes they make a towel. It's like, you know, like an alum. You take it. It's like completely. It's a different thing.
Kashai is.
Maybe Kashai. Maybe Kashai is. I don't know.
Then we should be Kashani.
I'm not sure what in Bengal is.
Maybe it's mustard seed.
But in Assam they have really, and also in Manipur, very astringent preps. They make a round mortar, means peas, the yellow ones, and they make that with this caustic soda.
Maybe
more.
It's an acquired taste.
Yeah, it is. But this is it's a taste. It's one of the tastes. They make also some kind of lauki with some split dal and the type of astringent. So it's one of, and then there's the sours like yogurt, and curry sauce, and so many sour things, and chutneys. The word in Bengali for sour is tok. And if you take something sour, it makes that kind of thing. So that sound is tuck. So Prabhupada would serve everybody. So what happened is that a commissioner of four different districts, he came to Mayapur, and Prabhupada said, look, I'm going to show you how to serve a guest. You devotees from the West, you have to also learn how to serve your guests. Because you're not serving them nice, they're not coming. So this is part of Vedic culture, atithya. Serving the unexpected guest. Atithi. Titi means the date. And when somebody knows he's coming, that's one kind of guest. But sometimes a guest just shows up. That's atithi. But they use any of atithi for all kinds of development. They said sometimes the Lord himself comes in disguise as a guest to see how you serve them. So that's why then the saying came that treat your guests like Narayan, you never know. Maybe the Lord himself is testing you. So this commissioner came, probably talked to him. Then he gave the prasadam, served it out. He even started telling a few jokes. We never saw Prabhupada telling jokes. So he looked and said, because he saw us kind of looking at him, you know, jokes from the guru. And then Prabhupada, you see, doing prasadam should be light talk. So it helps the digestion. When you're eating, if you have serious talk, it may create indigestion. So Prabhupada, he was so charming. At the end, this person, he fell in love with the Bengali misti dahi. This is a sweet yogurt. They cook down milk a little bit, so it becomes almost like condensed milk. Turn it into yogurt. It's a very special preparation. So Navadvip Dham is famous for the best misti dahi in the world. So when he had some of that, saw that sweet yogurt, then he said, oh, I want some of this to take some with me. Prabhupada, I can give him one pot. Then afterwards he was so charmed. He said, what can we do for you? Prabhupada said, well, we need 400 acres of land to build our temple. So he helped. He really helped. And every time I saw him, I would bring him a pot of sweet yogurt. So Prabhupada was teaching us how to receive our guests. And he said that actually everyone who comes to Mayapur, they should all get prasad. So even if it's a little tough, but something, they should get prasad. And then actually one time Prabhupada wrote a letter to all the temples in the world that in the morning they should put their samji and make a puri dough. And any devotee, any guest comes, they should cook hot puris and give him hot puris and vegetable. Halva also? I can't remember. But also halva. I don't know how many temples ever did that. But if he would have, I'm sure we wouldn't have more devotees. Would you like to come to the temple if you got hot puri, sabji, and halva?
Even Bhakti Vidya Paramaswami, who was a great philosopher, he said the main reason he joined was halva.
He was a cook.
Yeah,
he was a very great cook. In fact, he was teaching, he's still teaching people how to cook. Not only is he expert cooking, but Bhakti Vidya Purnamaraj was expert at serving Krishna. Serving prasadam, that's another Vedic. Because you really want to anticipate what the person needs. We learned about prasadam serving when we go to some life member program. And they'd give out, they'd fill our plate up with like four times more than what we could eat. And so we had to learn how to survive. How they can give so much. Then someone told us, this is the system in India. It comes from some Vedic heritage. If you want to serve your guest. If the guest says no, I don't want any more, you have to give them more. You ever know the rules of the game if you visit India and you're a guest? And then if they say no, and they block with their hands, you still give. If they say no, and they really seriously block, you still give. Only if they jump like a tiger and really are fanatic, then I don't want to fucking hit you like this. Have you ever eaten it? Have you ever been served in India?
Yes.
Really? Of course, we tell our servers in Mayapur to use some more westernized. Otherwise, the food is not so. When you go out, so we learn, all these little things that it's part of their culture that they like to serve their guests. And especially the wealthy businessmen, they know that if they serve a devotee, they get all kinds of good karma and blessings. So they're more eager to serve. But then also there's a question. When you eat people's prasad, you get their karma. You eat their food. So there's different things. One thing is you can offer everything to Krishna first and only take prasada. Then you are somewhat safe. Otherwise, Prabhupada taught us that there's different kinds of food. There's different degrees of. If someone gives you water, there's very little karma chance. If you buy food, there's no karma transfer. But you get that consciousness of the cook is still inside the food. If it's cooked food. So we're talking now mainly about, say someone gives you food. Then if they give you fruit, that's also a little bit of karma. But if they give you, then the next one is if they give you fried grains. Like puris, halva. So that's a little more karma. But the most karma is it's boiled food, boiled grains. Like rice, chapatis. Then you're taking maximum. So that's why generally we only eat food from the devotees. Or someone who's a vegetarian. Or in some emergency, or we buy it. Or in some emergency. Then you do the best you can. Like Prabhupada, when he was traveling in the train, one time we were at Mughal Sarai. This is one of the biggest junctions in India, maybe the biggest. And Prabhupada sent out a devotee to buy puris and sabji. And he said, you have them cook the puris in front of you. You watch them cooking them. Then it's better. It's like more pure. And also because it's fried, so it's less... There's no buying, so it's not karma, but there's less, and it's also more... Saint, whatever, more pure. See, he was so many little practical ideas he would give us. Once I wrote to him, and I go out and I visit the villagers. Sometimes they offer me a fruit or water. He said, well, if they're not vegetarians, it's best not to accept. But if you have to, then take a whole fruit. Not cut with their knife. And then if, otherwise if you take water, the best is to avoid. So there are so many practical things about eating and guests. In Bengali they have, I don't know which is Vedic culture and which is just local culture. It seems that, like one time I was at this program with the king of Nepal, Virendra Maharaj. And it was in about 30 years ago. And,
30.
And he was speaking to his people, his subjects. And he said that in Nepal, their Nepal kingdom, in those days it was, and said that the Vedic culture is entwined in everything we do. You can't separate it. It's like all merged. It's how we eat, how we live, how the marriage is, everything is, it's all intertwined. So there's a lot of this. Well, India is getting more westernized, especially in the big cities. And so now you're seeing some western influences. Young people wearing blue jeans. Everybody wears blue jeans. All kinds of them. But in the villages, but although there's this mix, still there's a lot of Vedic culture remnants which are still mixed. One thing I was seeing, sometimes we try to imitate, we say, this is Vedic, I want to, especially in our Grihastha lives, the Grihastha devotees. Husband says, I want a Vedic wife. She has to do everything I say. That's Vedic. I don't know how Vedic that is. Because in the Vedas, the husband protects the wife. But also in the Bhagavatam it says that the husband listens to the wife and considers what she has to say. So there's different... what's actually in the Vedas is Vedic. But then I found that in practical life in India that the women have a very powerful position. And that the husbands are very respectful, mostly what I've seen, especially in the cultured families, they're very respectful to their women folk. And usually the women folk run the whole house. Husband comes and gives them the money, and they run the house. He doesn't have to worry about it. One thing is that, like when I, as a guru, I had to face this, some of my younger disciples. They wanted to get married very early. In America, if you get permission of your parents, you can get married when you're even 14 years old. So we said that's Vedic. Young marriage. So they got married. But then there's a different, like in, I've seen what it is in India, is that the sons live with their parents. They like joint families. Like in the West, especially like in America, I don't know what it's like here, the parents want the children to leave the house when they grow up. And they think that's right. You leave your house, even the girls get out, get married. And don't. But the more east is that parents will want to see the children get established. Where in India, they had traditionally joint Hindu families, where the father and the mother, children, when the boys grew up, the boys would stay with the parents and the daughters would be given in marriage. So I go into some village and the father of the house, he said, this is my wife, this is my first son, this is his wife, this is my second son, this is his wife, and they call the wife as Boma. It's like my daughter. She's like a daughter in the house. This is my third son, his wife, the fourth son, his wife, and they all live in one compound. And so I was in one family in Calcutta. They had a big house with four stories, and they had three, four generations with five brothers. And they had total 55 members living together. And sometimes it's like, not only your children, but the children of your brother, everyone, it's like, that's what they call, like, all, like, they're all like brothers and sisters. So they call cousin brother. But it was very much united. And the traditions, like they have a big temple room, and the traditions of the family are kept very much intact because of that kind of a structure. Now in modern India, the apartment buildings and that kind of more like what I see here in Bosnia, that's more the standard in the big cities. We're still in the country, there are many of these joint families. So when a young girl gets married in India, it means that she goes to the family of her husband when she's, you know, old enough. And her mother-in-law trains her up and treats her like if it's a good, sometimes it's not good relations, but usually it's good. And she's like, she sees the mother-in-law like her mother. So she's taken care of, she's trained, she's engaged. And eventually, if she's the wife of the oldest son, when her mother-in-law passes away, she'll become the head woman of the house. It's like there's a whole order. So here in my case, this young American girl gets married 14 years old. She's alone in an apartment while the husband's working all day. What does she do? Turns on the television. Watches all these crazy shows, soap operas. Because we just imitate sometimes the Vedic culture. But we're not Vedic. We're living in the Western world. Vedic culture means there's a father-in-law, mother-in-law, there's a family, there's support. And there's a little girl isn't able to be the head of the family. So it's, unless she's really strong. So after watching so many television shows, she wanted to divorce her husband. Because that's all they show on television. So we had to see, like Maharaj gave us a purpose. The Vedic culture had a purpose. So please Krishna, to go back to Godhead, to have a better next life, give a better this life. Depending if you're karma kanda, jnana kanda, or bhakti kanda, vipassana kanda. So that's what I see. I appreciate that. Like, in South India also, it's even more traditional in many ways. Let me know that sannyasi, the feet shouldn't be touched by a woman. Or any sannyasi shouldn't be touched. They go into South India in someone's house, right, and they put a wooden platform out and they stand on it. And then they want to wash your feet before you enter their house as a show of respect, or maybe in the house. So then the wife will pour the water without touching, and the head of the household will wash the feet of the visiting sannyasi. So little things like that, you just pick up that, oh, this is very respectful, yet it keeps the proper etiquette. So I always appreciate when I travel in the village, I have many families which are following Krishna consciousness, and if they're a joint family, you get one person in the family, then usually the whole family goes Krishna consciousness. So, prasadam, families, what else? What's still there in Vedic culture? One thing that's there is Vaishyas know it's their duty to give charity. If you go to a businessman and you can convince him that you're doing good work, then usually they'll give you a donation. They respect. They know that as a Vaishya they're supposed to give charity. And sometimes, I mean, Prabhupada engaged us as when we first reached India, engaged us in fundraising. One time I went into one businessman's office and I went in to show him, I had all the pictures of the activities of ISKCON around the world. And suddenly this man starts to attack me verbally. I don't believe in all of this. You people are a bunch of cheaters. Who do you think you are? You're coming here and trying to take our money. I don't believe in all this. You're all bogus. Other than he, you know, he was just like shouting at me. And that, mostly they're always very polite and nice. But this guy was so heavy. It was not Vedic. But then I just waiting for him to finish. Then I said, no sir, what you said wasn't correct. And very politely said, you see, we're doing lots of good work. You can see the pictures don't lie. Then I showed my pictures and so on. He was like shocked. He thought he'd just blow me away and I'd just like run off. But because I just withstood whatever he said and started preaching to him and showing him. And he said, I'm very sorry. I was so harsh with you. I was just testing you. He's a crazy guy. I'm And then he agreed, though. He agreed, took out his check, and he became a life member, made a lot of Dhamma rupees. Sometimes you get created, you know, different kinds of people. Sometimes when you go collecting Dhamma people, they offer you, take a soft drink, have a lemonade, and I get you a sandwich, some sweet. I don't know what to tell you about the program. So then you're explaining, then you ask, you know, that if you could kindly become one of our life members and help us. So well, I have to talk to my wife. Or I talk to my brother. I gotta talk to somebody. So they put you off. And so sometimes you try to say, well, you talk to your wife when you make other business decisions. But if they were very insistent, you know, this, no, they won't tell you no. Most of them won't just say, no, I won't give. They'll give some excuse. If they want it, they're very polite to visiting sannyasi. I think that's very close. So then sometimes the devotees have become very, when you're, not ingenious, but determined. They're putting you off, they're giving you some excuse. Okay, when can I meet you and your wife together in the house? And pursue them, you know, to the end. One time, the temple president, he wanted to get a... He bought a land, but there was a tenant on the land in Bengal. It's very hard to get tenants off the land in Bengal. So he sent Mahaprasadam every day from the deities to the tenant. Until finally, he said, okay, okay, I'll go. It's too soon.
Andrew?
Yeah, Andrew, but Mr. Podar. It was worth millions of rupees to get the tenant out, but he was convinced by Mahaprasad. Culture, the people are very personal in India. Especially in the village. And like if I go walking in the village, once I was walking in the road taking my morning walk, and I met a villager I hadn't seen for 10 years. And he said, oh, Chai Pataka Swami, how are you? I said, all right, how are you? How's your wife? How's your children? They're all right. Now my son got married. And my daughter got married. I had a new cow yesterday. You know, like we're just talking, you know, like old friends. I haven't seen them for, but they're very personal like that. That's why. So I grew up in the village. So I'm used to that kind of personal dealing. I grew up because I've been in India when I was 21 years old. Since 36 years now, 37, I'm living in the Bengali villages. So people there are very personal, very friendly. One last story. When I first came to Mayapur, we were just living in a grass hut. And well, there's two things. One thing is, we didn't have running water. We had pumps. So there was a whole system that how to keep your hands clean. In Vedic culture, there's a suchitva, or cleanliness. It's a whole science. It's necessary for deity worship, it's necessary for just proper exchange. Like if you go to the bathroom, you have to wash your hands, your feet, And if it's a urine, and if it's stool, then you have to wash it. So many parts. I'm not going to get so technical. All the villagers, they wash the devotees, and they know the rules. They still follow this system. Even the local Muslims are really conscious about cleanliness. Because they do their namaz and they have to wash their feet and their hands. In Bengal, they're really conscious about cleanliness. Whether it's people in Arabia, if they're so conscious about the barrier. So that was one thing, is that when your hand's dirty and you have a bucket of water, and sometimes you have to grab the bucket with your arms, pour it over on your hands, and all kinds of techniques you learn. Maybe you don't need to use that here, because you just turn the faucet. But we had to learn all these ways of maintaining cleanliness with a very rustic kind of facility. When I first came, I was associated mainly with Muslim farmers. Because 50% of our villagers are Muslim and 50% are Hindu. And the Muslims, somehow the Muslims came and worked with us a lot. We had both. But my local farmers, a lot of them were Muslims. So I'd go over and talk with them and sit. So one time we were irrigating our rice fields. We were all at the irrigation well. And they're waiting for their turn to get the water. So one man said, I never want to leave my abode. Once in my life, I want to capture them. Never again. Such a horrible place. You don't know what I saw. I saw something very horrible there. Another one said, horrible, what did you see? Horrible. You see, I went in Calcutta, and there, in the park, there was a man sitting. Or maybe it was a lady sitting here. I think it was a lady sitting, and the man lay down on the park bench and put his head on the lap of the lady in public. Oh, horrible, horrible! Oh, so bad. I never want to see such irreligious activity. So the Hindus and Muslims, both are very conservative in the village. It's like two different countries. You got city people and the rural people. The rural people, and of course, the rural people are now getting television, so they're getting contaminated. Huh? Right? It's two different. But yeah.
I'll tell you a story. Our devotees, they went on traveling Sankirtan in Rajasthan just about 12 years ago. Where they were just getting electricity and televisions, and so what a difference. You go to the places that have TVs and those that haven't. So they're completely different. People with the TVs are just like so spoiled. People who don't have TVs are so much better.
And once somebody told Prabhupada they're going to have electricity, he said, why? They'll spoil them.
In the villages in Bangladesh, we used to have people, after dark, they just chant Hare Krishna. It's the normal thing to do. What are they going to do? Many places, it's very common. They just bring out their Vrindavans and chant. That's their culture. So now they all have TVs. The culture is broken. We're going to be some questions.
Okay, I've got to stop here.
magic boxes.
She has a magic hand up for the two fingers. Which Maharaj? The two Maharaj.
Maha.
Sometimes I heard that some mother can offer her son or daughter some food, but she is not devotee, then that her son or daughter is devotee. And I heard that it's okay if he accepts the food from the mother, only from the mother. Is it true or not?
What's the question?
Can he accept the food from the mother, or mother?
I don't know if there's anything hard and fast written about this. Like, my mother is not a vegetarian. Sometimes she was. But not always. So I tell her I won't eat anything cooked by her. I don't know if it's Vedic. But I accept from her fruits and other things. Just because she's my mother. But what I do is I have a devotee cook and have her guide them. She knows really good recipes for cookies. The other, she can do that mixing. But the fire, touching Prabhupada, touching the fire, it has to be like a Brahmin. So she gives the recipe and she guides them. But a Brahmin puts the cookies into the oven. So we engage her. A lot of times, tell the children when they go home, you cook for your parents. They're always saying, you always cook for me, I want to cook for you, and I cook them for Shana.
Prabhupada many times said that the parents of devotees, even if they're reading meetings, they must be very good, pious people who are showing their devotees.
So your question is, can she eat the vegetarian food from her parents?
Well, it's the same principle applies, that the karma and the consciousness is there, so I think it works with them. We should eat that which is offered to Krishna, which means it's offered to Krishna.
You can tell your parent that we don't eat vegetarian, we eat the prasada. So you cook together with your mother, and you offer it, and you can eat it. You put the food in on the fire. I get her to be a vegetarian.
These cross-cultural questions are...
But yeah, this is...
It's tough. Can be. Because on the one hand, you want to... One principle is to... You want to please your parents and you don't want to disrespect them. But on the other hand, if by pleasing them you have to... You can't please them and break devotional principles. It's please them.
Like in the Mother Veda culture kind of... remnant, but which is like distorted. It's like in Bengal you have non-vegetarian families. Many, mostly. 96%. And they like to eat fish, and some of them even eat meat. But they also do pujas on special days, like Janmashtami or some demigod appearance or something. For which they only all observe vegetarianism. So they have two sets of pots. Vegetarian pots for the special days and the non-veg pots. So this is a question that comes up, do your parents have vegetarian pots? Because otherwise we have to clean the pot and clean it with cow dung after thoroughly cleaning it with all kinds of other things, because otherwise some of the smell of meat may be there in the pots.
One thing that devotees who spend time living in India can appreciate is how superior this culture is. And it's not said from like a chauvinistic point of view, but just from the Krishna conscious point of view. There are many subtle points which you can appreciate after spending some time. Even devotees, they just spend like 2-3 years in India, and when they go back to the West, they get culture shock. It seems so gross.
The first time, I lived in India for 9 years.
I was just telling someone today. Was it today? Or
yes, yesterday.
We met you at the airport in Frankfurt. I was just telling them about
it. 78. From 1978 to 1979. It's 8 or 9 years I was in India. One,
I think it was 78. I was in Bangladesh and I came to the West in 78.
Like, one thing is that old people in the West, I mean in India, they're interested in spiritual life. They're interested in visiting holy places. They're visiting, I mean, it's like a different culture. Where old people in the West, and you're kind of in the middle here, they're more like they want to have this like their old age honeymoon or something. I mean, they want to enjoy life. They're still trying to enjoy life even though they're really old. So I was in this Pan American airline, first flight out of India for 8-9 years. I've only been with these elderly people that are very, the ladies are wearing the tilak or covering their heads and very, very spiritually oriented, come and chant and pray. And I'm in a group of American tourists who are going back to America. And they're all older people, like 55, 65, 65 up, white hair. And I'm right in the middle of it. Somehow. And they're laughing and talking and playing cards. Anyway, Americans tend to be a little bit loud. But then there's this one old lady. Elderly, I mean, she's like 65 up or right here. Coming from the front. And she's completely drunk. She can hardly walk. And she said, they upgraded me to first class. You know, there's classes in the airplane. First class, business class, economy. When you're in economy, you pay for everything. When you're in first class and business, you get free drinks. So she said, they upgraded me to first class. All the drinks are free. So I've been drinking so much, I can't stand anymore. And I'm looking and I'm thinking, like, where am I? I'm used to old ladies, you know, devotional, spiritual. And here's this lady, like, she's so old. I said, wow, I had a complete culture shock.
I remember you told us that when you got off the plane in Frankfurt. You came by Kuwait or something.
I'm still shocked.
One thing is that Islam is very much being slandered in the Western press, but in many ways they are upholding many facets of culture. Like they believe in family life, and they believe that religion is more important than economic development. So that's just one observation. It's what's his name, Khomeini, and in Iran we call America the Great Satan. In some ways, I mean, that's maybe also a stereotype, but the Western culture, they're pushing it in everywhere. Everywhere should have McDonald's and Coca-Cola. They want a more religion-oriented society. So that's actually... In Time magazine, one devotee showed me in Berlin some 10 years ago, I showed a American dominance of the world, which are in Pakistan, some village, some Coca-Cola, some. So I wrote a letter to them and said that, America will go down in history as the most intellectually decrepit society the world has ever known. And I published it.
It's in this book.
I put it in this book. Glimpses of traditional midlife. Many anecdotes about how people. If you want to see traditional India, go quick, because they're really in a hurry to go. And it's really unfortunate how that culture which has been maintained for thousands of years is in such a big hurry to throw it all out. It's really very unfortunate. Prabhupada wanted to revive that culture all over the world.
Yeah, just to balance the American version. At least in America, they give us the freedom to practice our Krishna consciousness. And in America, you know who some of our best friends are? It's the Muslim groups. Because we both stand for very similar things. And in America, we're both minorities. And so there we work together very closely.
No, I should balance that also. I'm not American bashing per se. American people in general, everywhere, people are nice. They just don't have knowledge of Krishna. Prabhupada appreciated
it. I was just bringing it up, to show that the kind of difference in culture among the elderly, it's not their fault, that's the culture they've grown up in. We're trying to change it, we're trying to improve quality of life, that elderly people should concentrate their life on their next birth. And by our propagation, we get more older people too. But it was just a shock for me, because the day in India, I could really see the difference. I go in and out 3 times or 10 times in the year, so it's not the same. But that time it was like, where am I?
He was saying that here it's like it's not the West. I was also saying this morning, I think, that it's like geographically and culturally, Bosnia is kind of in between. More the West, but not fully. So people still have some culture, family culture, that's very important, actually. I mean, we often find in the higher Vedic teachings how family life is all Maya and should be given up, which is actually, at a very high level. But then something which is very important, that before you give up family life, before you reject it, or there should be some kind of basis of family life to give up. In society, if there's no family life, then children are just, they're neglected. We see in the Western countries that family life is broken down and people are very disturbed. So family life is actually very important. And even though we are sannyasis, we appreciate the importance of how family life, stable family life, is the background of any civilization. If it's not there, then there's no culture. Culture is, as Arjuna pointed out in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, if the women are not protected, if the family structure is not there, then all the traditions break down. So, although in Vedic culture, women, they don't have the freedom, as in one sense, in many senses, is in modern life, but at the same time, they're such an important role. They're the first guru. It's stated in the Shastra. First guru is the mother. The basics of culture and of religion are taught by women, and they're respected. In Bengal, you'll find people, they come to the city and work, but every man in his wallet will have a photo of his mother. So much respect and so much gratefulness. So women in the West, they want their freedom, but that's because of lack of culture, they've not been treated properly. If they're protected and respected in a very honorable position, they can actually contribute to society in a way which, as mothers, and wives and sisters in a way which the freedom to become a bus driver or a fashion model or an airline pilot, it's just not the same.
There's so many traditions in India that we don't necessarily follow. When you're there, you see it going on. Like he just said, sister. There's a lot of different things with sisters. There's a Vaifuta, that one day in the year, sisters give their brothers a blessing. And all the sisters go and put a little kind of prasadam, rice, and kumkum, and things on the forehead. Called Vaifuta. Then there's a another program where some lady ties a rashi bandhan. This is big in the West, but not in India. They tie rakshis around the... Someone, if they tie a rakshi around your arm, that means they're accepting you as their brother. You can't marry them. They have to protect them as a brother, big brother. All kind of little kind of cultural things that they do in India that don't make it to the books and that, but there's like all kind of, it's like, there's no end to it.
You were saying about how they're all living together in the family as brothers. I remember I was going around a village when I was just new in Bangladesh, and one young university student was taking me to his village and taking me into all the homes in the village. He said, I introduced, this is my brother. He went to the next house, said, my brother. And the next house, said, this is my brother. And he said, everyone in the village is your brother? Yeah. They're all my brothers. He didn't introduce them as friends or neighbors, but they're all brothers. And in Gujarat, the culture is that you can't marry in the same village because you're brought up as brothers and sisters. You can't marry in the same village. There's so many, big culture, elevated culture. It takes some spiritual understanding to appreciate it. Rising early in the morning. That was there. Everywhere.
Everybody takes a shower.
Everyone rises early. Even in Calcutta, you'll find that they have like broken pumps on the side of the street where water comes out. It's flowing all the time. In the early morning, the rickshaw wallahs are over there taking baths.
Worst people will take a daily shower. Any other question?
Ja se to zapitam, da li je, znači, da li je ovo, znači, ova kultura o kojoj pričam, da li je Prabhupada mislio na to kad je rekao da ćemo kulturom osvojiti svet?
Is this a culture that we are speaking about, the culture that Srila Prabhupada told us that is a culture by which we are going to conquer the whole world? Is this a culture that you were speaking this evening?
No, we're just telling what the remnants of Vedic culture that's in India. Some of the things like feeding your guests properly, offering your everything to Krishna. Our Vaishnava culture is more than Vedic culture. It's where it's everything is God conscious. Well, some of the things in India have the base in God consciousness. But it's not, may not be fully God conscious. So we're taking, Prabhupada took the essence of
it.
And the essence is Krishna consciousness. But he also said it's good to appreciate how the, just like you may read that bulls plowed the land. But when you're in India, you can see it. I did it. I plowed the land with a bull. That's part of Indian culture. But whether what we can, what's suitable for us now. That depends on each time, place, and circumstance. in this discussion more just to appreciate that there's India still has some remnants, but we don't want to imitate that. We want to follow our own Krishna conscious culture, which is taking the more spiritual essences. But some things we can learn from the Indians. You know, we are basically, that's where our roots are. Yeah, I don't know if there's anybody here from India. But in many temples, almost everybody is from India, or 50% are from India. Some places like here, there's nobody from India. What we do in our temples, offering arti, offering pujas, offering the reception to people coming, the Indians feel at home. They see that's part of their culture. And the principle that we should do everything to please God, that's the principle that we're trying to remove. But some of the colorful aspects of Vedic culture, the art, the drama, the music, the festivals, these are things which are very attractive. They're also Krishna conscious. They can be Krishna conscious. Where we use them, they are. And that is something which attracts people all over the world. I was just in Birmingham, UK, and they had the Rath Yatra there. The mayor broke a coconut. There was a girl from Hungary that was doing Bharat Natyam dancing. And I appreciate it. Explained how all the hand movements are expressing some pastime of Krishna, some message. The mayor appreciated. So which aspect of the Vedic culture you can use for spreading Krishna consciousness that you can see in each time place? Nibbana, I just wanted to tell you that when you went to India and you saw all the modern trains and the dirty streets and good streets and this street, there's all different things, the things you're going to see. But behind it, there's still some remnants of Vedic culture. And some of the principles are definitely conquering principles. Treating people nice. But I don't want people like blindly following things that they think are Vedic without knowing that actually how it's applied. Like as I started off speaking about marriages, people in the West, they're not brought up in that culture. So husband and wife have to come to some agreement how they're going to work together. How traditional or how modern. According to their own reasons. So there's certain principles they can know, but I've seen people try to like fanatically apply them in unreasonable ways. So by discussing a little bit more objectively, then we can avoid it. These are what do you call sub-religious or subordinate principles. The main principles are Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam.
Coming from a slightly different angle, I'd like to say that as much as we can intelligently apply these principles, they can help us in our Krishna consciousness, how to please Krishna. Krishna lives in Vedic culture. In that you send principles of cleanliness,
you know, how we serve prasadam. We don't touch the spoon to the plate when we're serving. We always have to be very clean because we have to serve the Lord. We have to be clean to serve Him. It's entwined with Krishna consciousness. So, as much as we can intelligently apply these principles, understanding what is to be applied and what isn't to be applied in different circumstances, that will be very helpful for us. Which is one reason, or main reason, Prabhupada wanted for us to come from the West to spend some time and learn about these principles and then take that back. So, Priti Bhagavan Prabhu was here, he's been with Bhakti Vidya Purnamaha. He was here, so he's spent many years teaching some of those principles. Anyway, no, he's not. I just saw he was lifted to listen anyway. So there are many, many things to be said about this.
Well, just because maybe we told some funny stories or some select examples which are not representative of everything, just take in just to show some example. And he asked this question, is this the culture that's going to conquer the world? I felt it almost like a challenge. If you take the things out of context, then
It requires intelligent application. Therefore, gurus are required to help us to guide us how to apply the principles in our particular circumstances.
How to get the gold from a filthy place.
There are many gurus. The mother is the first guru. Guru, the word in a broader sense means those who are older than us as devotees in family structure, those who are just older in general. Like Maharaj was saying, you expect older people to be very cultured because they have spent their whole life developing this culture. So if they are, then if they're doing that, then by the time they get old, they become wise. But if you spend your whole life watching TV and getting drunk, then you just become an old fool. I can't help anyone. But old people are so much respected in Vedic culture because they have so much to offer. You know, they spend their whole life cultivating higher values. And then by the time they're older, they have so much to offer. So they're respected. But old people in the West aren't respected because they're not respectable. And the whole culture is based on sense gratification. They have nothing to offer for sense gratification.
That's another aspect of Vedic culture. Like just now they're starting old folks homes, but mainly amongst the Christians. So in Indian culture, the Hindus, the Vedic side, the children would protect their older parents.
And it's that anyway. There's so many things. It seems that if we do that, most people are so neglected in their old age. We've seen that in the West, devotees do that, which is unusual. Maybe still in Bosnia it's going on, but in the West, as Maharaj called it, it's unusual. But then people really appreciate when they're Krishna conscious. Sons and daughters look after their parents in the last stages of their life. And they appreciate them. They've got some higher culture.
Higher?
Switch the translator.
Okay, well, maybe that's a sign. Vedic culture begins.
He's burnt her out.
What's the beginning of Vedic culture? Giving is every day giving. It's also helpful for those of us who are not on the level of the six Goswamis to rest in time so we can get up early. I just want to present that I've written one book, or it's based on interviews with devotees who are brought up in a very traditional Indian Vedic culture, and my own experiences mostly in Bangladesh. So I've written this book, Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life, which gives some idea and flavor through mostly through anecdotes of what this wonderful culture is. I just brought out a new book on pilgrimage in Holy India, my travels to some of the many wonderful holy places. And a very one foundational book. There are three main books which are the basis of Vedic culture, which are Mahabharata, which is what's going on here, this Ramayana, which is available. Did Ratsi also have? Did you bring it? And of course Srimad Bhagavatam. So Ramayana, it teaches just by hearing the wonderful narration, we learn of some principles of Vedic culture. Brahmachari life is the